The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of redlegnation.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. I'm your usual host, Chad Dotson, from redlegnation.com. We're going to, at this time, without further ado, jump right back into Bill Lack's discussion with Big Red Machine pitcher Fred Norman.
So, you had a pretty good year in 75. You went 12-4. It's one of the only 2 years that your ERA was above league average, but it was only .02 above league average. So, I mean, it's basically league average.
Yeah.
And you were used in the bullpen some, and from what I read in Big Red Dynasty, it says you moved into the rotation when Gullett broke his thumb, and you went 9-1 in the second half of the season.
That's correct. Yeah, here we go, got a job to do, Donnie's out, and he's my locker mate right next to me, and I hated to see him out. You know, I said, oh, man, we'll have to figure something out here until you get back. And we always used to talk stuff, and we said, oh, I'll be back. When I get back, somebody's going to pay. Jack used to say it all the time.
Yeah.
But Donnie was out, so he gave me the ball. Sparky gave me the ball, and I'm ready to go. I was always ready to go. It didn't matter to me. I mean, obviously, I wanted to start because I thought I was a better starter than a reliever. And so you get the opportunity, well, you have to make the most of it. And generally, I did. I usually did. And I think it picked up the club, as well as the staff, but as well as the whole club. It picked us up, and ended up doing some things that they expected anyway.
So you guys win 108 games that year. You didn't take any chances with it being close. You won the division by 20 games.
Yeah, we blasted. Yeah.
and in the playoffs, you got your only postseason win that year in the playoffs. In game two against the Pirates, you started and threw six innings.
Right.
And Raleigh Eastwood threw the last three, and the Reds won 6-1 in that one. So
yeah, picked up the pace there. I always pitch against the Pirates, pretty much consistent with them, as far as victory wise. Got hammered a couple of times with them. Usually I pitched pretty well against them with their left-handers involved, but usually I didn't have problems with left-handers, with right-handers as well as I did sometimes with left-handers, And I always pitched well because I usually would face more right-handers than I did left-handers. Of course, Stargell and Parker were there then. They were the big two guns, and then, of course, they had the third baseman. Richie Hebner was left-handed also. So, it was left-handed, basically dominant club there. And so Sparky went pretty much with his left-handers against Pirates.
So we beat the Pirates and we're moving into the 75 World Series, which is many claim maybe the best World Series ever played. Tell us about the Fred Norman perspective on the 75 World Series.
Well, obviously my first one. So it was just kind of all about that. But not as much as I thought I would be. I thought I'd be a little more hesitant or nervous about it and everything, but I really wasn't because I knew the club that I was on. It was just a matter, to me, I thought it was just a matter of time. We're going to win this thing. I don't care if we were down 3-0. I just always felt, I think any of us never felt that we would get beat. I took it that way myself, and I was hoping I'd pitch a better performance. I think I pitched game four.
Yeah.
It just didn't happen, but I enjoyed it. I'll tell you that because it was just something that became with me having a guy. Well, Pat Darcy was the guy that gave up you know, the home run in the sixth game.
Right.
And he was my roommate at that time. So it felt kind of bad for him. But I don't think we ever felt as a collective team there, we ever felt that we're going to lose this thing. No, we just felt we're going to win it anyway. I don't care whether it's going to be by one run or 10 runs, we're going to win. I had no doubt in my mind. It was my thought. You know, that was my, you know, I never could imagine us losing that year after winning 108 games.
Five of the seven games were one-run games. What a World Series. I mean, every game, other than game one, every game was a pretty good game.
Yeah, pretty good game. And these guys, Boston, had a very good call. They really did. I mean, I know they missed Jim Rice and all that. But, you know, it's just I think we were just destined, you know, as far as that goes. They could have won two. But I never had that in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, I never thought that for a minute. You know, and I think most of us felt that way. I don't think we were nervous about it. I don't think we were down. I know we were down 2-0 when Perez hit the 3-run homer.
Yeah.
What, exactly. 2-run homer.
Yeah.
And tied it up, you know, off Bill Lee. And it was just one of those things you just knew. And then, of course, then you see Joe Morgan get this little Texas Lee or fluke, wherever. You knew you were going to win. I mean, I just knew that. That's just how it works. Unfortunately, for Boston, they did it really well. But that was my feeling on it, is that I just always thought that, you know, this series was ours. We just made it a little tougher, you know, but it was ours. Because the following year, there was a no-doubter.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the feelings in the clubhouse after Game 7. I mean, was it a feeling of relief, or was it just, wow, it's about time, or is it, you know, or is it just joy? Is it?
Nah, it's a lot of jubilation. I mean, you know, it's just everybody's happy. You know, you got the, you know, the flow of the champagne, and everybody's just cheering away and going crazy. You know, it's just one of those things that I think they probably were relieved at a point. I think that Sparky knew that. You know, I don't think he was even worried about it. I really don't. I think he just knew that our club would come back somehow and win this game. Fortunately, you know, we had to go seven games. I think most people didn't think it was going to go seven. I don't think it was going to go past five.
Yeah.
But it did, because we were favored by whatever, and it didn't, and I think that's what kicked some of these guys in the butt, saying, hey, man, we're supposed to win. Yeah. You know? So you got guys, the leaders that we had, we didn't have just one leader, you know?
Right.
We had some guys that had been there. And so this helps more than anything. And this is why I think, you know, when it's all over and said and done, these guys were happy as well as, say, me or anybody else that hadn't been there yet. You know, like Pete Rose, Bench, and Perez.
Right.
These guys are happy as all get out. You know, I mean, they're just, you can see it, you know.
Yep. So they're
just winners.
Yeah. So we're going into 1976, and you guys really slacked off that year. You only won 102 games.
Right.
And won the division by 10.
Well, we won the last 10 games in a row, if you remember.
Actually, you know what? I don't remember because I was in boot camp.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh, you know, you got other things in your mind.
Yeah, I was a little busy at the time.
Yeah.
But
no, we won our last three games of the regular season. I remember this. Our last three games of regular season.
Oh, and then you mean, and then the four and the three, and then the four. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
We won the last 10 in a row, so we were on a roll. But to me, Bill, this is the best team that ever was. The 76 Reds was better than the 75 Reds.
That was a question I was going to ask you later.
Well, you can ask me now. I think it was the best team out of both of those. But
what was better about the 76 team than the 75 team?
I think we picked up a couple other guys too in trades or something like this too. But it was just the fact that I think the 75 was over and the 76 team begins, that, you know, they were relieved that 75 season was over.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of a struggle, you know, to win that thing, because they were counting on us so much And then comes 76. I mean, a guy who just so relaxed and just go out there and just pounded the ball. Their pitching did well. Sparky always told us he had a meeting with the pitchers. Sparky knew he needed pitching to win. There's no doubt about it, just like anybody else does. All he wanted, if you guys can give me a 3.5 ERA, we will win this thing. And that's all he wanted. And I think we were like 3.53 or something. You know, something like that.
But you had one of your best seasons ever that year. I mean, you were 12-7, but your ERA was only 3.09, and you threw three shutouts. And one of those shutouts you beat Sutton, and the other one you beat Matlack.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, hard to relate. You know, the slot I was in, usually it was third or fourth slot, you know, as far as going, leading off, and maybe throwing a second or Gary Nolan a second or whatever, third, and I was end up being in whatever slot I was in, facing, you know, some rough guys, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, the pitchers that gave us a little problem, you know, and so it was always a feather in my hat. You know, to beat these top guys, you know?
Yeah.
Or like anybody else, you know, you want to beat anyone, it doesn't matter. But when you know, pitch against those guys like Cedars or your Matlack and these guys, Kuzmans and even guys, you know, throughout the league, you know, Bob Gibson or any of these guys. But it just, you know, I just had a good year, you know, that year, and it worked out well, and it was a follow-up for the next year, you know?
You
kept moving forward because I'm advancing as far as age goes, and
yep.
I'm still throwing pretty decent. You didn't
pitch in the playoffs against the Phillies, but the series only went three games.
That's correct.
And I'm assuming that's why you didn't pitch. Were you supposed to pitch game four or something if it had gone that far?
Yeah, I think so. Either that one or, more or less.
Okay.
Sparky, like right-handers going against him.
Did he? Okay. But you did start game two in the World
Series. The second game in the World Series.
Yep, you pitched the second game at Riverfront against the Yankees.
At Riverfront, and actually that, you know, and I didn't know it, but I got a telegram from some very good friends of mine out in California that sent me the telegram that it was the first Sunday night World Series game.
Really?
Yeah, I did not know that. Check that out in your archives.
Yeah, wow.
Whatever. But, yeah, first Sunday night World Series game. And it was probably 38 degrees in Cincinnati. 76. Somewhere here, 38, 40.
Cold.
And obviously, I didn't feel it. Once you get moving around and stuff, you're good to go. But,
And you threw well. You threw six and a third and gave up three runs.
Yeah, I went six and a third. I was winning, I think, 3-2. When Sparky took me out, had a run on second. Billingham came in relief, gave up a base hit, and they scored their third run, tied us up. And I think we ended up winning 4-3 or 5-3.
Yeah, 4-3 scored a run in the bottom of the ninth.
Right, I think it was 4-3. And beat Catfish,
And then you guys
Catfish neither way back in Kansas City days.
And then you guys went up to New York and finished it off in short order.
Oh, yeah, that game. And I was going to be pitching game five on that one. I'd have been going game five after four.
But you were happy not to pitch, right?
Absolutely. Get it over with.
That's right.
You know, let's end this thing. That was an awesome, awesome team. It was just everything worked out well. Bench had a great, you know, World Series.
Oh, yeah.
Couple homers, whatever. Of course, his counterpart hit pretty well himself. He had like 10 or 11 hits, did he?
Thurman Munson?
I think he had like 10 or 11 hits somewhere in there.
Nine. Yeah, he was 9 for 17.
Yeah, 9 for 17. And we dominated. I mean, it's just a team that everybody did well. Everybody. Just, pitching was good. Hitting was good. You know, how are you going to beat that, you know? Whether it's regular season or a World Series,
But
it just happened at the right time, and it worked out great.
So we move into 77, and the Reds make a trade, and they trade Tony Perez in the offseason.
Yeah, that's correct.
And there's been a lot written and a lot said that that was a big part of why the team didn't do as well in 77. But I've also read where the pitching staff had a ton of injuries in 77.
They did.
I mean, you guys still won 88 games.
Yeah. Yeah, just unlike us, but you know, usually in the 90s and up. And but yeah, I think once Tony left, and you know, once you start switching things around, and you know, you see people coming and going, I think it takes effect on all the players. You know, I mean, all of a sudden, oh hey, my name is so and so, nice to meet you, nice seeing you. Here you are in June or July, and you know, you got two or three more months to go for the season. You know, and you see guys coming and going. Sometimes that disrupts the, or you know, the ball club. And I believe that. I really do. I mean, there's some guys you can bring in a couple times here, you know, a couple here, a couple there. I mean, but, I mean, we, you know, we got rid of four guys from Tom Seaver, I believe.
Yeah, and one of them was Pat Zachary. Yeah, and Pat Zachary was a big loss. I mean, he was
one of them, and, you know, he was a guy that did well for us. You know,
he's been a big cog the year before.
Then
speaking of Seaver, tell us a little bit about playing with Tom Seaver.
Oh, it was true. It was awesome. Great. You know, he was a guy's guy. You know what I mean? The guy, he'd have a beer with you or whatever, and talk baseball. I loved it. And you know, Tom did his thing. You know, and it was good working around him, watching him the way he went about his job. You know, and this is why he won over 300 games. And in the Hall of Fame and all that. But he was just a pretty steady guy. You know what I mean? Just a common, regular player as well as anybody, you know, else. And there's just nothing. But what stood out about him is his professionalism. You know, how he went about his work. And as well as the other guys that we had. You know, and when you see that, you know, it kind of wears on you. Know, just, you know, you want to do that too. You know?
Yep.
But I thought he was a good addition, you know. I know we've, you know, lost some players there, but then tried to replace a couple of them. Sometimes it doesn't take a couple of years to do that.
I mean, he had a heck of a second half when he came over. I mean, 14-3.
That's a great second half.
Yeah.
I think he probably welcomed it as well, you know, to come over and move over to another organization. He'd been with New York for all the years, ever since he signed. And then he comes over to an organization like Cincinnati, and they welcomed him very well. And obviously, you know, he throws the no-hitter and, you know, this stuff. And that was the year also that I was having a good year.
Oh, yeah.
I think I was like 10-3 or something, 9-3 or something, all-star break. Had a year in low ERA, and I thought I was going to make the all-star team, which Sparky called me in the office because he was going to be the manager in the 77 All-Star game, and he says, I know you should be going to the All-Star game. And I said, yeah. And I thought I was going to be, because he's going to be picking.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, but he says, got Dan, what's his name, Candyman from Candelaria, John Candelaria.
From Pittsburgh?
With Pittsburgh. He's going to be pitching on Sunday. And because he has a back issue, and if he's okay, he's going to be going. And I said, oh, my gosh. You know what I mean? What happened? Even if he pitches, he's not going to pitch in the ballpark. You know, come Tuesday, I'm saying, well, you know, whatever. You know, whatever. So, well, I mean, what else am I going to say?
Right, what can you say?
But I wanted to make that all-star team so bad.
Yeah.
I really did. That was my only chance, really, because I did start off well and did well. And, but of course, you know, as it turned out, I didn't. And ended up 14-13, I think.
Yeah.
ERA was pretty decent.
3.38, and the league average was 4.
Yeah. And I was leading the league for a while then, and quite a while. Yeah. You know, but, yeah, I had a little rough outing in Chicago. A game we came back and won. But, yeah, just unfortunate for me that I didn't get a chance to be on that team. I wanted too bad. But we just had that year was just so unlike, you know, a Reds year.
Yeah.
And it happened at a time where, geez, you think that this club will stay together for another couple of years, even, and get another pennant, you know, at least, you know, another National League pennant, but it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
Too many guys coming and going. That's actually how I see it, yeah. But as well as anybody else. They say the same thing.
Yeah. So, 78, you guys win 92 games. The only problem with that is the Dodgers won 95.
Yes, they did.
And you again went 11-9 and 3.70 ERA. You were just a .01 above league average, so you had another good year.
Yeah. That year, 78 year, was one of those turning things, too. And, of course, Sparky, that's when Sparky got fired.
Well, after going into 79, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and...
And Pete left.
That was a funky year, you know, 78. Because that was the year also we went to Japan, and had a lot of rookies that went over with us.
That was before spring training, or was it?
After spring training, it was in November.
Oh, okay. After the season.
Yeah, we went over after the season, and that's when they closed Sparky once we came back. That's when
Dick Wagner.
Dick Wagner came in and told me, it's going to be relieved, and bingo. There that goes, and of course... good friend of mine that I played for in the minor leagues, and he caught me for years, John McNamara.
Yeah.
He had on board him for 79.
So Pete leaves, and Sparky is let go.
That's right.
How is that dealt with? I mean, how did the players feel about that as you guys got back together in the spring?
Yeah, 79 spring.
Yeah.
I think the turning point probably was that we had a new manager and a guy that was respected, new pitching coach, some new things going on, mm-hmm. You know, as far as the club was concerned. Of course, Pete not doing too well at that time and filed for free agency, I believe.
Yeah.
And so I just think they assumed that, well, you know, Pete's going to go. Bench is still here, but Davey is still there. Concepcion is still there. Crippy.
Morgan and Foster.
Pretty much, you know, with Morgan and Foster, obviously. And you know, Danny's reason has to have an opportunity, I guess, to play now later. Mm-hmm. And he did due to that. And, of course, Foster was doing pretty well. You know, so he figured that, you know, we had a shot, you know, of doing some good. I wasn't real sure. You know, my performance too. I'm getting older and all this, but I don't know. Things. I don't think they really thought a whole lot about all the changes. But I think a lot of the change came in '77. You know, for the most part, in '77. You know.
Yeah.
And so then in '78, it kind of just rode it out, and then '79 just seemed like a new year. You know, I didn't know which it was, but. It was just a different atmosphere. And so, I mean, it worked out pretty well. I mean, we got in the playoffs. You know, but we just didn't have enough.
How was John McNamara a different kind of manager than Sparky?
Well, he's a player's manager. Mac was a player's manager. Always has been. He was like that in the minor leagues. He was always a player's manager. And he looked after his players. But he got the most out of his players. I mean, he had guys like Lou Lenoda, all these guys in the you know, Oakland A's. That was his club, you know, all those guys. And, but he just, he was a guy that you respected. And to do, you know, he looked out, you know, as far as, you know, he's still going to manage. He's still going to make his moves. If he needs to take you out, he's going to take you out. Like one time I had a conversation with him about taking out of a ball game one time, and I went in there and told him so. And, you know, he says, well, I just said, well, I thought I should have stayed in the ball game. He said, well, I thought you should have been out of the game.
So you were out of the game.
I didn't belittle, I didn't shoot him up, I didn't do any of this stuff. You know, I'll do that. And I said, well, I want to come in here and express my comment about it.
Yeah.
You know, so everything was left said. That was it. No problem.
So,
yeah, that was it.
So that was your last year with the Reds. You ended up having 7 years with the Reds. You had six straight winning seasons. You had seven straight seasons where you won over 10 games. You went 85-64 with the Reds with a 3.43 ERA. Which do you think was your best season, Fred?
My best season? Probably, it was definitely going to be the 77 season. If it worked out, I had a chance to win 20 games that year. But didn't, and the 77 stands out a little bit. But probably the season I liked the most, obviously, was 73. My very first time there.
When you first came over?
Yeah, I won in seven, and I mean, my gosh, you know, came back, I think, what was it, 12-6? And I thought that season was a good year for me. I really did.
You, in your time with the Reds, you, more than almost any of the starters, seem to be used as kind of a swing guy at times by Sparky.
Right.
Is that the case, or was everybody kind of used in varied roles?
I think he did that with Billy Hamill also, and they did it with me too. When I was having a little problem, there was a time when I was upset about the fact that I went to the bullpen, and then once I was in there, we went to play an exhibition game in Detroit. And I said, I told the pitching coach, Larry Shepard, I said, Shep, I'm not pitching in this game. There is no way in hell I'm going to pitch in this game. I earn money by pitching in regular games. This is an exhibition game, and I don't need the work.
That was those old kid glove games, wasn't it? When they used to play the Tigers in those kid glove games.
He told Sparky, he wasn't too happy about it. And I didn't care. At that time, I did not care. I said, hey, I make my money on pitching in regular games or losing, whatever. And so what did he do the first time he came back? Gets me up. And so I guess he's hoping I fail, right? He said, so Shep says, when I come back, he said, man, don't make me look like a fool. I said, all right, don't worry about it. Pick me a game. I'm ready to go. Well, I got my stuff back. I'm feeling good. Because he put me in the bullpen because I'm having a rough time starting.
Yeah.
So I wasn't doing so well. So they shoot you in the pen to try to work things out.
Yeah, try to get you,
Get me back, even straight up again. I come out and I pitched well, so it was fine. Everything worked out fine.
We touched on this a little earlier about the pitching staff being underrated, and the Reds pitching staff had an ERA below league average from 1970 to 76. Do you think they were underrated because of the way they were used, or because maybe none of the starters, you or Billingham or Nolan or Gullett, they weren't big names? I mean, the bullpen always seemed to get plenty of credit.
They did. Our bullpen was good.
Yeah, it was very good.
Reasons. But and plus they were used a lot,
mm-hmm.
The way Sparky was, yanking them starters out, they were used a lot, and they should be. They were good, but I think we had our opportunities also to stay in some games that he yanked us out of, and, the game I had in Montreal, I beat Montreal. I think I own a 5-0 or 6-0 record against Montreal, and he took me out of the game one time there. I remember Joe Nutsall telling me after the game, he's going to interview me. He said, man, I'm upset too. I thought you should have stayed in the game, and if you want to say so, you go right ahead. I said, no, I don't have much to say about it. I mean, he took me out, and that's the way it is, and I'm glad we got the win and all this sort of stuff. As you know, I don't like to come out of games. I'm that way. And Sparky commented one time about what somebody said, they said something about me or something. He said, Freddie, he don't like to come out of games. he does it.
Well, I've read some comments from Jack Billingham, especially, where he felt Sparky and Larry Shepard were really hard to work for, and he didn't think they respected the pitching staff. Did you ever feel that way?
Who was this?
Billingham said.
Oh, yeah. He didn't think that Shep
and Sparky respected the pitching staff.
I think Shep stuck up for us at all costs. I really do. I think Larry loved us, and so did Sparky. But I just think the way Sparky went about it, sometimes maybe some of the guys didn't like it. But I always respected Sparky. I really did. I think he did a hell of a job for what he had to work with. I mean, what I mean is, look at the guys he worked with.
Right.
That he kept under control.
The egos that he had to deal with.
Under wraps, yeah. That he knew how far he had to go with them to, you know, because they would rip each other and get hot and heavy in this clubhouse, let me tell you.
Yeah.
It was just the way he dealt with them, and I think, you know, and he knew that he had to have pitching. And I think this is why he used to get on us a lot. I really do.
You know, when people talk about the Big Red Machine, they always talk about Bench and Morgan and Rose and Perez as being the leaders of the team. Was there a leader on the pitching staff?
Probably not. Probably not. I just think everybody just as a whole.
A collective
group. Were there, but all looked after each other, really, you know. Or we would console, like Gullett and I one time in Chicago. Gullett gives up a home run to Billy Williams that beat him in a game. I came in and kind of gave up a home run to Billy Williams and beat me a game. Here we are, consoling each other, you know, afterwards.
In the We Hate Billy Williams fan club, right?
Right. it worked out pretty good.
Yeah.
It really did. I think everybody kind of respected everybody else on the pitching staff. I think we all rooted for each other, you know. I don't think we... we're against each other.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I think we're pulled for each other. Because I don't know anybody that would do that.
Right.
You know, right. I really don't.
Fred, let me ask you a question. You said that you did pretty well against the left-handers in Pittsburgh's lineup. What big stars were you pretty successful at getting out?
Oh, boy. Pretty much the free swingers, you know, the guys that home run hitters. I always had pretty success with Reggie Smith, Cedeno, these guys. They just could not hit me. No way. I mean, they couldn't hit out. Probably if I threw right-handed, they couldn't. I don't know what it is. But, you know, you have this. And, Reggie Smith used to comment about it all the time. He was with the Dodgers. He says, oh, my gosh, you know, I mean, I can't hit this guy.
Okay.
I mean, I either striking him out or he's popping up or, you know, just had good success with him.
Let's flip the coin then. Who used to wear you out?
Oh, well, you know, there's a few of them. But, yeah. You know, you're basically guys that get the bat on the ball. You know, they battle you like crazy. And I'm battling out there, too. And I'm going, gee, why is it so tough? You know, here's these guys that, you know, hit these little pingers or line drives and, you know, and you're getting guys out like, you know, Willie Stargell or getting guys, you know, that really pound the ball. And, you know, it just, you don't know. I mean, it's just on a given day, somebody just, you know, they just hit you all over the park, you know. But normally it's guys pretty much that, you know, maybe try to read me, you know. Mm-hmm. In other words, guess with me, this kind of stuff. And, you know, if they guess right, well, they're going to hit me pretty hard. You know,
Can you remember anybody in particular that you didn't think should be able to hit you that seemed to hit you well?
Well, I'll tell you, in the beginning, I think I gave up I gave up three home runs, I know, to Hank Aaron.
Well, there's nothing, there's a lot of people that did that, though.
But like everybody else.
Yeah.
I ended up pitching pretty well, I guess. But, of course, he's getting older, too. But Mike Schmidt hit me pretty well after I, you know, finally learned that, you know, he became a pretty good breaking ball hitter.
Yeah.
So I had to use the fastball a little more. But I don't know. Anybody stands out? I really can't remember right now.
Okay.
I know, and I wish I could. I mean, if I thought about it, there'd probably be a few of them. But
Let's play a little word association. I'm going to throw a name at you, and you just tell me a real quick thought on them. Okay?
Yeah.
Pete Rose.
Pete Rose, oh boy, great guy to be on the field with. I mean, he was a guy that just, you know, he'd come in, he says, now, you know, once he came in to play third base from the outfield,
mm-hmm.
So that George Fossey, you know, he had George Fossey on left field when
right.
Pete came. And he said, you don't mind me talking to you, do you, during the game? I said, no, I said, because I'll keep in the ball game. that to me tells me what type of guy he is. I mean, this guy could, you know, you love to have him, you know, behind you.
Okay. Johnny Bench.
Awesome catcher and good caller. Had a great photographic mind, you know, that type of thing. And just a great target, you know, to throw to. I mean, it was incredible. When you're out there 60 feet, 6 inches, and he's another foot and a half behind that and whatever, and it just looked like, you know, it didn't matter how big the plate was or small the plate was. It just looked bigger than life, you know. Mm-hmm. It was a great throw to him.
Joe Morgan.
Wow, scrapper guy. I mean, the guy just, the way he played the game, limited in his throwing ability, but he got the ball over to first base when he went into the hole. I mean, he just was so quick to get to the ball, and he knows his limitations, you know, but, I mean, he just, he was incredible to play with, by the way he went about it. Here's a guy, after a game, first time he didn't talk to any reporter or anything after a game, first thing he did was go in his locker and start writing stuff down in his book. You know, about, you know, how the guy pitched on him or whatever, you know, basically what it was for.
Did you ever see anybody have two better years than he had in 75 and 76?
No way.
Yeah.
Awesome. Just, you know, and I kind of like him because he's my size.
You know? That's right.
We're both right at the same size. But
how about
a guy like that? I mean, my gosh, he's so powerful, but yeah, he was just such a steady, just straight, steady ball player. I mean, he'd play 145 games or whatever, 142, whatever it was, and Sparky sitting down and for a day or two, and then he'd come back barnstorm, you know what I mean? And that's what he needed. So Sparky knew his players,
yep.
You know?
Okay.
He knew who needed a rest at this time and know what they would do when they come back, you know?
Okay, how about Pedro Borbón?
He was my other locker guy. He was on my right side. God was on my left side, and had Pedro on my right side. Just a good guy to have in a ball club, you know? I mean, here's a guy that can throw about three or four pitches, and he's ready to go. I never seen anything like it. I mean,
he could throw every day.
Every single day. And Sparky knew this. I mean, it didn't take him long to warm up, and he's ready to go. If he had a guy in a quick situation that he needed, call on Pedro. Boom. Or if he had a guy that had to knock somebody down, he'd call Pedro.
Call Pedro, you
know? So Pedro would do that, you know. Yeah, God rest his soul, too. He was a good guy. He really was. Good to have on the ball club.
Gary Nolan.
Yeah, there's another one. You know, as one of our starters, and how he went about his business, too. You know, he was so good, and yet had arm trouble here and there, and if he had a safe arm and didn't have any of that, I guarantee you he won 300 games, 300 plus.
Yeah.
He just had great stuff, and he was smart. And that's what made him last a little longer than what he, you know, it was amazing how long he could last after, you know, the arm injury.
Yeah, he came back as a whole different pitcher from the way he was pitching in the mid-60s to the early 70s, yeah.
Yeah, he's a fastball pitcher, fastball curveball.
Yep.
But he always had good control. And that's the plus part of him coming, you know, having that sore arm and whatever. And I think he had surgery on it, too. But he is just a delight to watch pitch before or after, you know, either way that we played. But yeah, like Gary a lot.
Clay Carroll.
The Hawk. The Hawk was good. He's the type of guy also. Could pitch every day.
Yep.
Every single day. Sparky taking him out, put him out there, and man, he would just go to town. And you know, he was the stopper at one point there for a while. And you know, he lost that to Raleigh or whatever. But it didn't discourage him at all. He went out there, and Sparky called on him. Bingo. He's out there, you know, throwing his butt off, man, and he was good at that. He was real good at that. He had a good movement on his ball for quite a few years. I remember he was with Denver, I think, in the Milwaukee organization at that time, Braves.
Yeah.
And he was a starter then, I think. But, yeah, I remember him way back there, you know. Oh, yeah.
And one last name, Tony Perez.
Tony Perez, just a delight to be around, like everybody else talks about him too, and says, family man, great wife, Patuka, and the kids, you know, with Eduardo, and Eddie, and Victor.
Yep.
Just a great family, but the guy himself was a tremendous guy. Here's a guy that was a pretty good leader on that ball club. And here's a guy that, you know, here's a man that English-wise did as well as he could, and everybody understood him, and everybody listened to him. And that was a big plus for us to have him on the ball club.
Well, Fred, it's my opinion that you were one of the big unsung heroes of the Big Red Machine, and I really enjoyed watching you pitch.
Well, I appreciate that very much, Bill, and I did enjoy it. It was a time in my career that couldn't come any sooner. It worked out so well for me. Always thought myself as being, you know, that type of player, you know, a winner. I wanted to be a winner, and I wanted to be on the winning club like everybody else. But, you know, I've just always done that growing up, and it just worked out well enough at the end that I got on a super team to be able to make my dream come true, you know, as being a winner, plus being on a winning ball club, and obviously winning the World Series, and a couple of them, and not too many people get that opportunity.
Well, on behalf of myself and the other editors at Red Leg Nation, I really want to thank you for taking so much time with us tonight, and I hope we can talk again sometime.
Yeah, that sounds great, Bill. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling.
Love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast. Now, with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.